Welcome to Torah Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Hochheimer, and today we will be studying Yirmiyahu, chapter 21. The last parak was divided into three sections. First, we learned about how Yirmiyahu was thrown into prison and then released. Next, we heard a tefillah that Yirmiyahu davened while he was in captivity. And finally, we read of Yirmiyahu's despair and his wish that he never would have been born. This parak begins many years after the last parak in the times of Tzidkiyahu, during the siege of Bavel that lasted 1.5 years. Rabbi Landy outlines the immediate history preceding the siege. Nebuchadnezzar had the goal of conquering the known world. An emperor needs to take two things into consideration when building an empire. He needs to calculate how to supply his marching army as they move further away from their stable base, and he also needs to pay attention that his power base back at his home country remains stable. Nebuchadnezzar was in the region during the first 4 years of Tzidkiyahu's reign. During the 5th through 8th year, Nebuchadnezzar had to stay close to home to solidify what was going on politically there. Tzidkiyahu got the impression that Nebuchadnezzar was weaker, and so he made a treaty with Paro, which violated the treaty he had already made with Nebuchadnezzar. In the 9th year, Nebuchadnezzar marched again on the region. He needed to put down rebellions in Ammon and Yehuda and decided to first attack Yehuda. He laid siege on Yerushalayim in retaliation for Tzidkiyahu's disloyalty. This was no secret. Everyone in the region knew that Nebuchadnezzar was coming with a large army as he set up camp on the opposite side of the Jordan River. Tzidkiyahu sends two messengers, Pashhur ben Melchiah and Zephaniah ben Messiah, to Yirmiyahu with a message asking for help. Chazal tell us that Tzidkiyahu was a good man, on whose behalf Klal Yisrael was not completely destroyed, but he was also weak and couldn't stand up to the noble class when they disagreed with him. Here Tzidkiyahu is sending his messengers to reach an understanding with Yirmiyahu. This is not the same Pashhur as the last parak. They had different fathers, and Zephaniah was a replacement for Pashhur. He was a new Sagan Kohen after our friend Pashhur from the last parak was exiled. The two messengers have a request, which is a bit ironic, to say the least, for Yirmiyahu. Verse 2. Drashna ba'adeinu es Hashem. Please daven to Hashem for us. Ki Nebuchadrezzar, melech Bavel nilcham aleinu. Nebuchadrezzar, which is another name for Nebuchadnezzar, king of Bavel, is waging war against us. The messengers know that Nebuchadnezzar is powerful, and they would need a miracle to escape this siege. So they assume that if Yirmiyahu davens, Hashem is going to listen and do miracles. Ulai ya'aseh Hashem osanu kechol niflosav. Maybe Hashem will do for us miracles like he did in the past. Hashem has done many miracles. He's taken them out of Egypt. He's conquered the land of Israel. And most recently, says the Me'am Lois, Sancheriv left Yerushalayim when he was fighting Chizkiyahu, and that was clearly a miracle. Tzidkiyahu's men recognize that there is a God and that he does miracles in this world. And so they want Hashem to save them from the powerful Chaldean army because they know that without a miraculous intervention, there is no way they're going to survive. This would seem to be the exact opening Yirmiyahu has been begging for the last few decades. Hashem does not accept their request. But why? The Me'am Lois says that Tzidkiyahu was misguided. He thought that the nation's salvation was dependent on a powerful tefillah. In previous prakim, the people treated the Beis HaMikdash like a good luck charm. They could do what they would wanted, and Hashem would be good to them if they brought enough karbanos. Tzidkiyahu had the same attitude. He thought he needed a good tefillah, and he didn't need tshuva, and he would be saved. Tzidkiyahu was focused on the result, that Nebuchadnezzar should leave, and he didn't want to commit to anything that would require any changes on his part. Yirmiyahu conveys Hashem's message to Tzidkiyahu in verse 4. Ko ha'mar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. This is a nevuah from Hashem, who oversees everything that happens to the Jewish people and can do miracles if he wants. Hinini meseves klei ha'melchama asher b'yedchem. Behold, I am turning back the weapons of war that are in your hands. There will be a miracle, but it will not be in Yehuda's favor. All the weapons that have been stockpiled will be turned against them during the war that follows the siege. A siege has particular characteristics, and it is a time of peril for those living in the city. People know when an advancing army is coming. There's reports, there's advanced scouts. So anyone who's living in that region on a farm or in a village will flee their home to a fortified city in the area for refuge. The city, meanwhile, has been stockpiling water and food for months for all of the residents. However, the population in the city increases drastically in a short amount of time. Moreover, the nature of the community changes. people are coming from outside of the community, so they don't have the same connections and allegiances to the leadership there. Patients, food, and water are soon in short supply and dwindle daily. The Malbim explains that during the siege, a portion of the city will try to convince the army to surrender. The army will need to use their defensive weaponry against their own people. Their weapons are then turned against them. In this case, after starvation and infighting, Hashem will allow the Kasdim, ruled by Nebuchadnezzar, to breach the city walls. Vasafti osam el toch ha'ir hazos. I will gather them into this city. Hashem will do exactly the opposite of what the messengers want. Verse 5. V'ilnochamti ani itchem. And I, meaning Hashem, are going to wage war against you. V'yad netuya uvizroa chazaka. With an outstretched hand and a strong arm. Uva'af uvachem uvaketzav gadol. And with anger and with fury and with great wrath. Hashem will fight Yehuda with plagues and diseases and with battles and by empowering the Kasdim to be strong warriors. These phrases sound very similar to phrases used in Haggadah to describe how Hashem battled the Egyptians during the Makos and on the Yam Suf. Now, instead of the miracles for Klal Yisrael, Hashem is doing miracles against Klal Yisrael. Verse 6. V'kesi es yoshvei ha'ir hazos. I will strike the inhabitants of the city. V'esa adam v'esa behema and the people and the animals. B'dever gadol yamusu. They will die in a great disease. Hashem will strike Yerushalayim first. The residents of Yerushalayim are held to a higher standard as they are living in Hashem's home and were expected to act appropriately. The people and the animals will die from a horrific disease that will spread quickly through the crowded, besieged city. Yirmiyahu then adds a second aspect to the Nevuah. He informs Tzidkiyahu's messengers what will happen to the royal family, as well as to the citizens of Yerushalayim who managed to survive the disease, battle, and famine. Verse 7. They will be delivered into the hands of Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babel, into the hands of their enemies, and into the hands of those who seek their lives. And he also shall strike them with his sword. Nebuchadnezzar will not have any compassion. He will not spare them. He will not have pity on them, nor will he show compassion. There are different reasons why a person might allow an enemy combatant to live. The people might be profitable as slaves, or the enemy might have rules of war where they can't hurt POWs unnecessarily. In this case, Nebuchadnezzar has no compassion, and he is cruel. He will slaughter Tzidkiyahu's children in front of him, and then he will blind Tzidkiyahu so he will suffer for the rest of his life. In verse 8, Yirmiyahu now gives advice to the people how they can hope to survive this time. They do have a choice that could possibly lead to their survival. Behold, I am placing before you a choice, a way of life, and a way to death. Verse 9. Anyone who stays in the city will have no hope. They will die. They will die by sword or by famine or by pestilence, as we've mentioned before in the Perek. Right now, it's not possible to leave the city as the soldiers are trying to keep everybody in. But once the battle begins, once the gates are open and there's movement, the people can escape. When they escape, they should choose to surrender themselves to the Chaldeans. V'haisa lo nafsho l'shalal. He will at least have his life as a bounty. He won't have any possessions left, but at least he will be alive. Verse 10. This city is destined for destruction because Hashem has Samti Fanai Ba'ir Hazos Lera V'lo L'tova. I have set my face against this city for evil and not for good. We had discussed in previous Prakim that the Gullus is marked by Hester Panim. Hashem's hiding his face from the people so they are subject to the laws of nature. This is not the case here. Here, Hashem is paying direct attention to the city to pay them back for all the bad they have done. The city will be captured and conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, and he will burn it down. Yirmiyahu now turns to address the house of David, the royalty. In the last parak, Yirmiyahu told the people that they could prevent the Gullus by keeping Shabbos. In this parak, Yirmiyahu has another suggestion for the monarchy. They need to, verse 12, dinu lavoker mishpat, judge justice in the morning. They need to work on having a just society and making sure it is a hallmark of their day. Vatsilu gazol miyad oshe, and rescue the robbed from the hands of the robber. the royal house was responsible for maintaining civil liberties and adjudicating disputes between citizens. They need to hold trials in the morning, which means they should try to make sure justice is served as quickly and as early as possible. This would transform them into a moral society rather than a corrupt one. Yehuda had many flaws, including idolatry. Hashem did not decree that they should be destroyed until they became corrupt and took advantage of the vulnerable. In order to be saved, they need to work hard in improving themselves in this area to prevent the Charban. Pen tzeitzei k'ha'esh chamasi uva'ara ve'ein mechabeh, lest my fury go forth like fire, and it will burn with no one to extinguish it. Mipnei roa ma'alalechem, because of the evil of your deeds. Hashem then warns them that he is fighting against Yerushalayim. He calls Yerushalayim Yosheves ha'emek tzor hamishor. It is the dweller of the valley, the rock of the plain. Yerushalayim sits in between two valleys on either side of it. It is as if it rests on a secure rock. Rashi says that Yerushalayim is in an emek, in a valley, or it sits in a place where Hashem is ha'amik. He is delving deeply for how to destroy the city. Yehuda was confident that nothing would cause problems. Mi echas aleinu? Who's going to encamp on us? Umi avo b'meos noseinu? Who's going to come into our homes? They felt no army was powerful enough to have a prolonged siege in this region, and no people would be able to penetrate the defenses protecting Yerushalayim. For a long time, Yehuda had been living a miraculous experience. Though they sinned, nothing remarkable happened to them. They may have suffered a bit or been attacked, but then everything went back to normal. This constant forgiveness is ending now and is going to change their perception of themselves. In verse 14, Hashem is going to start paying them back. Kifri malalechem, according to the fruit of your deeds. They will now suffer direct consequences based on the sins they have done. Vitzati esh bi'ara v'achla kol sviveha. I will ignite a fire in her forest and it will consume all her surroundings. The fire, Nebuchadnezzar, will start with Yerushalayim and then he will burn all the cities of Yehuda and the whole land. In this parak, we meet Tzidkiyahu for the first time in the Sefer. He is a good king and he is coming to Yirmiyahu with what seems like a reasonable request. He wants Yirmiyahu to daven for him that there should be a miracle. Yirmiyahu says Hashem will not save them. There will not be a miracle. They will be destroyed. Their only hope of salvation is to act justly and honestly. If they don't, beginning in the place that was meant to be the home of justice, that is where the destruction will spread to the entire surrounding area. This perek contains some important lessons. Tefillah is not like one of those toy machines at the pizza store where you put in some coins and prizes come out. Tefillah requires us to develop our self-awareness about who we are as we stand before Hashem and ask for his help. If we are knowingly defying Hashem's will, we cannot then turn to him and ask for him to help us if we don't try to change ourselves. On Rosh Hashanah we say, Tshuva, tefillah, utzedakah, ma'avirim, esroa, hagzera. That tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah make an evil decree go away. We need to try to improve, daven, and then act kindly to our neighbors to merit salvation when we in fact deserve punishment. We can learn another lesson as well. Hashem told the kings that they should focus on bringing justice to their society. A community can do many wrong things in many ways. The one thing that will cause a bad decree to be finalized is if people are corrupt to each other and oppress the vulnerable. As a community, we're always trying to change and improve and do better. We always are looking at ourselves. As we do this, we should always keep in mind the importance of a society and a community that is founded on honesty and integrity. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmas, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bas Alexander Sender.